men who provide what we laughingly call... Yes, the laugh.
Away already.
The cascade of comedy we call Fool the Other One. And the three wise men are Frank Carson, Bernie Clifton, and Ken Dodd. We'll be confronting our guests with some strange but true events and seeking their explanations. Events like the odd goings-on, for instance, in the quiet Dublin suburb of Dunleary, where in 1947, a routine bus journey turned into what we might describe as a nightmare. The trouble started when the driver, Mr. Sean Wilde, got into a heated discussion with his conductor, Mr. Eamon Carr, on the subject of horse racing. Thus distracted, Wilde took a wrong turning and jammed his bus under a low bridge. Angry passengers pointed out that the only way to dislodge the vehicle was to partially let down the tyres. But Eamon spoiled things by deflating them completely. Driver Wilde, who loved his bus, refused to drive on the rims and in the argument that followed received a painful blow in the eye. Police turned up and removed Carr and Wilde, and a reserve crew arrived. They half reflated the tyres, and when then able to drive the bus out from under the bridge and straight into a workman's trench, which had been dug that morning.
Do you know, that is a derogation of the Irish nation.
A what?
It doesn't matter.
That's what they put.
What's the
derogation? It's never mind. I happened to be actually there that day when this fellow was there, and I looked up and I said, "Are you stuck under that bridge?" He said, "No, I'm delivering it, and I've forgotten the address."
Well, we have our first tale for you. We want the explanation. It's the sad story of Mr. David Martin, a newsagent of Retford Knox, who was extremely unlucky last year. He was out walking his dog on the banks of the River Idle when he was attacked by a swarm of wasps. Thinking quickly, Mr. Martin leapt into the river to escape the winged furies, but within moments he had cause to regret it. Why?
And the river was so polluted, he broke his neck.
Not quite right.
Somebody once said to Frank Carson, "Are you interested in the Wildfowl Trust?"
He said, I wouldn't wear one. I never wear them at all.
So this fellow was attacked by some swans who tried to pinch his signet ring.
Well, I remember walking into the pet shop and saying to the fella, I walked into the pet shop and I said, "Can I buy a wasp?" He says, "We don't sell wasps." I said, "There's one on the window."
This fella, he's out walking his dogs. What's his name? Martin. Bob Martin.
Martin, yeah.
He was obviously a dog lover. And, which reminds me, the ones, you know, there were two dogs. And they were watching Top of the Pops. And one dog nudged the other dog. He said, "Look at that." He said, "We did that. We throw a bucket of water over us."
What about the two dogs? One was a big, massive Afghan hound.
And the other was a derogator.
A little derogator. And the big Afghan hound said, "My feet are freezing." And the little dog said, "You think you've got problems?"
This man was taking his dog for a walk, and the dog stopped. And instead of cocking his leg up, it stood up on its hind legs and put its front paws up against the wall and did a piddle. And I said to him, "How long has it been doing that?" He said, "Ever since a wall fell on him."
Well, I'll tell you a true story of Bobby Robson, the England manager, and I wrote
a true story.
Yeah,
on this show.
On this show,
Bobby
yeah.
Robson. They're not allowed.
And we parked outside Parkhead, and
as you would.
There was two Dobermans in the car, and the fellow said, "Don't worry, these Dobermans look after the car." And this wee fellow says, "Give me 50p, and they'll look after you." He said, "Get away, son. Hey, Dobermans will look after the car." And we come back after the match, and there was a note on the windscreen that says, "I hope your Dobermans can blow your tires up."
So what was
you mentioned there in a very, very derogatory fashion.
Derogatory, yes.
In a very derogatory fashion, you mentioned Bobby Robson. Do you know that was Mickey Mouse's 60th birthday last year?
Mm-hmm.
And he got a Bobby Robson watch. You know, all right, Bobby Robson. Bobby Robson now come up with the perfect answer to solve the England football team's problem. He's got them wearing the jerseys back to front so it looks as if they're attacking.
Mr. Martin, I think... Mr. Martin likes... Well, Frank Carson likes messing about on the river, according to some underwater dancers.
I think he jumped and landed on a box of matches, on a swan's vest.
Well, you're nearly right. I'll tell you what happened. Mr. Martin's leap into the River Idol.
The River Idol. Isn't there a job centre anywhere around there?
The River Idol.
No, but I think there's an awful lot of vice there.
Yes, he what? Escaped the wasp. But was seriously bitten on the leg by a pike. That's what happened to poor Mr. Martin. So you were nearly right there, but not quite. Not quite.
We always get so near it, don't we?
And yet, so far. All right, we're going to go on to people in Rotherham. People in Rotherham are still talking about an odd identity parade held by local police after a series of thefts in the Munsborough district. What was unusual about this particular lineup, and why were all the participants a little on the small side?
Can I just give you a little bit of local knowledge? I'm sure that the word there is Mexborough, not Munsborough.
Nicking things, you know, these days it's a problem. If you leave a car on the side of the road,
right,
it's stripped in no time.
Yeah.
That's why you see a lot of frustrated spinsters hanging about in lay-bys.
Well, let me just say...
We have a neighbourhood watch scheme in Nottingham.
Yeah.
And it's my turn to wear it next Thursday.
Well, let me say, I go to Liverpool every year. I go to your native city every year just to visit my hubcaps. Although, let's be honest, the government has taken great strides and reduced the number of unemployed small people. Look at the jobs that are available. What about a HUD carrier for Lego? an engineer on Airfix.
Yeah, what about... it could be a lumberjack on a mushroom farm.
Yeah, or a policeman in Toy Town.
Did you a bouncer at Mother Care?
Blonde girls. Blondes prefer going out with men smaller than themselves because they can't see if their roots are showing.
This identity parade, Frank should be an expert at this, because Frank had an uncle that was called to take part in an identity parade where a lady had a handbag stolen, and he's standing there in a line of men, and as a lady came along, Frank's uncle stepped forward and said, "That's the woman!" It must be the way you tell them, Frank.
And your midget was thrown out of a nudist camp for poking his nose into other people's business.
The police get some very strange cases these days. I saw a policeman on Crime Watch the other night, and he was saying he wanted to interview someone wearing stockings, suspenders, pink satin, you know, French, with a diver's helmet on his head. But the chief constable said he must wear his uniform like all the other policemen.
I was in Munsborough once, and I was in this pub. It's a very small place. The speed limit signs are back to back. And the main road runs through the car wash. And I went in this pub, and on the end of the bar, there was a fella. He was 4'6" tall, and he was wearing a pink bouffant wig, a pink lacy shirt, pink leather trousers, and pink cowboy boots. And on the end of the lead, he had a pink poodle. And I said, "Where did you get that?" And the poodle said, "I won him in a raffle."
Bernie Clifton was once held by the police. He didn't mind being held, but he got very upset when they blew in his ear and whispered,
"Yes, I got stopped one time in the car by the police, and he said, blew into this bag." I said, "Why?" He said, "My chips are hot." And he said to me, "You're doing 65 mile an hour in a 40 mile an hour zone." I said, "Can you make an idiom trying to sell a car?"
He stopped me once and said, "You're doing 65 miles an hour." I said, "I've only been out 20 minutes.
These little infortunates who were lined up on the small side,
owing to the native Yorkshire habit of people keeping the money in the sock, and instead of pickpocketing, they were sock picking.
I know. They were garden gnomes.
Well, you're brilliant. Oh.
They were garden gnomes, and somebody had been pinching garden gnomes, little diddy men, and...
This is brilliant. This man, Mr. Todd, has done it. The Rotherham Identity Parade was a lineup of garden gnomes. Police were anxious to trace the owners of 34 gnomes stolen from local gardens, and most were reclaimed. And there is apparently no truth to the story in the local Rotherham paper that the rest are being cared for by the National Elf Service.
Yeah!
We come on to our agony aunt spot, where these men with such wisdom give advice to a grateful nation. And here is the first problem from a Maidstone man with a big problem. He writes, "When my girlfriend and I were on holiday in Benidorm, cameras filmed us playing leapfrog on the beach. I'd had a few drinks and didn't think much about it. But I've since learned that the pictures are to be part of the regular opening sequence for a new TV holiday series. And I'm afraid this may upset my wife. The fortnight I was away, I told her I'd gone to Middlesbrough on business. What steps should I take?"
All together, big ones.
This man has got a guilty conscience, you see, and this does happen to men, you see. There is one story about a man who was lying in bed with his wife, and he was playing around. This particular evening, he was lying in bed with his wife, both were fast asleep, a thunderstorm started, there was a brilliant flash of lightning, and he leapt out of bed shouting, "I'll buy the negatives."
Well, you see, there's an easy...
The trouble with Bernie is, Bernie took this idea of a foreign holiday, he's drinking in a different pub.
I think there's a very obvious answer here. What this gentleman should do is join a Keep Fit Club in Middlesbrough and tell the wife he was practicing outdoors. All right, here's another one. What this man should do is confess to his wife. Throw himself on his wife's mercy and say, "Yes, but it was all innocent fun, dear. Kiss her and caress her and make love to her." And then, if he says that, he's a liar.
Is there an end to this?
No. Not really, but I'm working up to one.
Isn't it amazing what
isn't
men...
Isn't it amazing how I can go on like that?
It's amazing.
I just say stupid things.
It's like...
Well, don't make sense in the end, you know.
Isn't it amazing, though, what men will do to deceive their wives? Oh, one particular man, he spent the night with his girlfriend, and as he was leaving his girlfriend's flat at 4 o'clock in the morning, he took a little piece of white chalk from out of his pocket and put it behind his ear, went home, kicked the cat, kicked the milk bottles down the step, went upstairs, and his wife sat up in bed and said, "And where have you been?" He said, "Well," he said, "I've spent the night with my girlfriend. We went for a beautiful meal, and I've had 4 hours with her," he says, "and here I am." She said, "I don't believe a word of it. You've been down the pub playing darts with the lads. You've left a piece of chalk behind your ear."
I don't, Mr. Frost, I don't know whether you have sympathy. I don't know whether any of us have sympathy for this couple.
The best thing for this man to do is sell the TV, take his wife on holiday to Benidorm while the show is on, and do leapfrog with her.
Yes.
And that would mean it would all, when he comes back, repurchase the TV, because you know I've just signed a contract for Granada Television for 3 years, and if I don't keep up with the payments, they'll take it back.
Right, well, that's very good advice, I think. Here's one other problem from a young bride in Bristol. "I have recently got married, and my mother-in-law has come to live with us. The trouble is, I don't know what to call her. Mrs. Graham seems much too formal. But the only time I tried using her Christian name, she became extremely frosty. And mother-in-law is an awful mouthful. Can you suggest any names I can call my mother-in-law?"
What about Führer or Oberlin?
Ayatollah is a good one.
Yeah, but my mother-in-law's as pretty as a picture. You know that last night I tried to hang her.
Well, we put a picture of my mother-in-law over the fireplace. Keeps the kids away from the fire.
Yes, sir. And who there, darling? Her thing's in the Gestapo.
Jimmy Cricket's mother-in-law was a big woman.
Oh, big one.
Right. 18 children. She was always saying to Jimmy, "Come here, there's more."
It's a typical case, isn't it, of strained relations. I've got strained relations. I've got two uncles with double hernias.
I've got a mother-in-law whose face is a hazard to oncoming motorists.
I overcame this mother-in-law thing because the first thing I did for my mother-in-law's birthday, I bought her a racing bike. She's riding around the block, and she fell off it, and she got up with the biggest smile, and I thought, isn't that fantastic? What a sense of humour. She got the handlebar stuck in a gob.
Well, I bought my mother-in-law a nice chair for Christmas. I brought my mother-in-law a nice chair for Christmas, and I can't get her to plug it in.
I wouldn't say my mother-in-law's got a big mouth, but she can get 3 billiard balls in it and still not get a cannon.
I brought my mother-in-law around Madame Tussauds and I brought her into the Chamber of Horrors. And the intendant says, can you tell your friend to keep moving? We're stopped taking it.
Very good.
Right. My mother-in-law had an enormous nose, I'm afraid to say, and at my wedding she nodded at the vicar and cut the cake twice.
The advantage of having a mother-in-law about the house, of course, is you don't need to buy an answering machine. And the difference between a mother-in-law and a parrot is a parrot shuts up when you throw a cloth over it. Bernie Clifton's mother-in-law is 25 stone. And he calls her Bingo, because every time she comes to visit him, he always has a full house.
Well, she wanted a society wedding, so we got married at the Co-op.
One other question here from somebody called George in Southampton, who writes, I gave up smoking some time ago, and my problem is I no longer know what to do with my hands. Please help, as I'm determined to stick it out.
Well, what a funny way to get life imprisonment. Well, he didn't want to do with his hands. That's easy. Shoplift.
I knew a pickpocket who only used one finger. He used to come home with polo mints. There's nothing to giving up smoking anyway. I gave up 6 times last week.
What would you do?
Well, I only smoke after... I give up. I cut my cigarettes down completely. I only smoke after a meal, and I'm down to 47 meals a day.
Well, I smoke 60 a day. There's nothing wrong with my lung.
Right, well, that's good advice again.
It is.
And now we come on to an incident that happened in Russia. Moscow's main international airport was severely disrupted in 1987 when a group of passengers became excited and difficult. Waiting rooms had to be cleared, lifts were put out of action, scuffles broke out, and police had to be called before order was restored. What on earth could have caused such problems in a well-run place like Moscow Airport?
It wasn't English football supporters, was it? You can always spot English football supporters on the road. They're all carrying railway carriage doors under their arm. I don't know.
Yes, well, Russia is it's a strange country. Do you know Russia? They're the television watching you. KGB, you know what that means?
Keep going, boys.
My favourite joke.
You know, there's something wrong with me.
You know why Russian men... Somebody said to me the other day, do you know why Russian men kiss each other? I said, yeah, have you seen the women?
Frank Carson thinks that glasnost is Russian double glazing salesman. Security is so tight at Moscow Airport, Joan Collins was body searched by customs officials and she was only there to see somebody off.
Well, the elections are funny as well. You've got to put your vote in one box, and if you don't do that, they'll put you in another box.
I like the election slogans. Remember, you have the choice of two parties, the Communist Party or a farewell party.
I think all the passengers are probably monkeys on the plane, and the keeper actually got the wrong bottle when he was feeding them, and he plied them with vodka, and they very near strangled him.
I think Ken's right, because I mean I've done a lot of flying. I remember we always fly economy from workshop, and the plane takes off from a kneeling position, and the first 200 miles we spent crop spraying. We stopped at Carlisle to take on more wood, and we were over the Irish Sea. One of the engines stopped, and the pilot spoke. We could hear every word he said. He spoke into the microphone, and he said, "Good Friday, Boxing Day, Bank Holiday Monday." I said, "I think the word you're looking for is May Day."
Well, Mr. Frost, now you travel extensively, like the rest of us here, we're all over the place. Do you know how you can tell an Italian plane?
I think I do, but I'll let you say it.
Yes, it's got hair under the wings.
Did you know that Israeli Airlines are going to amalgamate with Italian Airlines?
Yeah.
And it's going to be called Velatelia.
Actually, Ken got closest there because the passengers who caused the trouble at Moscow Airport were a cargo of monkeys. The monkeys from an East Berlin zoo escaped from the cargo bay and swarmed through the airport terminal, riding up and down in the lifts. They were finally pacified by tranquilizer shots. So that was... Well done, Ken.
You've done well, Ken.
And I must admit,
you haven't been very good with the questions, but you've been brilliant with the answers.
Exactly. And finally, friends, this tall tale about Wellington boots. Mrs. Tina Carpenter of Wootton Bassett. One hot summer's day on a visit to the metropolis, Mrs. Carpenter saw an odd sight in a fashionable West London street. An elegant lady was carrying a fabulous bouquet and was dressed in a magnificent picture hat, delightful floral chiffon dress, and great big black Wellington boots. This combination puzzled the good Mrs. Carpenter, but she later found the explanation in a magazine. What do you think that explanation was?
I think this lady was on her way to a building site, and she was wearing a low-cut, a very low-cut dress, all ready for the topping out ceremony.
It's just going to show you. I think it was Danny LaRue's job.
See, times have changed now with ladies' dresses and ladies' fashions. I saw a wedding last week where the dress gave the bride away.
It just goes to show you what a bizarre place London is. I was on North Circular Road and a man pulled up alongside me riding a penny farthing. He'd got a cap on back to front. He was wearing braces, a string vest, and plus fours. And as we left the lights, I shot away from him and he overtook me doing about 60 miles an hour. He stopped at the next light. I tore away from him and he overtook me again. This happened six times. I wound the window out. I said, "Are you some kind of fitness freak?" He said, "No." I said, "I've got my braces caught in your wing mirror."
If there's any girls out there that want to take my advice, if I was you and Maria transvestite, it means you can double your wardrobe.
The fashions that people, young people wear, you see, some of the jeans they wear are so tight, you automatically qualify for the Vienna Boys Choir.
Do you notice sometimes, I think the audience out there will realize that they're listening out here all over the country or maybe in the World Service, then you realize that
how optimistic are you?
I said, I've heard this program in Gibraltar on my cassette. And I think I leave it to the general public, Mr. I leave it to them to say, he's told that joke wrong, and it means the following week they'll switch in to hear what the real answer was. Although they don't get it.
No. I think this is just typical of what's going on in London. It's a complete island. I mean, there's so many strange things happening. And it's just characteristic of the people, isn't it? We, Frank and I were walking through the underground on the way here, and there was
lovely
an old tramp there.
There
was an old tramp rattling a tin cup and singing very, very badly. Got an old RAF overcoat on and a tatty pair of shoes, and the soles of his shoes were flapping, and frankly it was a marvellous gesture. This Frank from his pocket took a big wad of fivers. It would have choked a donkey,
right?
And he took the elastic band off the fivers and gave it to the man and said, "Put that on your shoe, it'll top your sole."
I know. What? This lady in
what's
this bizarre outfit, the answer to this question is found in a magazine. You see, this lady was a journalist, am I right? And somebody said to her, "Are you the Farmers Weekly?" And she replied, "Well, twice if they're up to it."
I know, you're nearly there. You're nearly there. In fact, the lady in gumboots was, in fact, minor European royalty. She'd been attending the Chelsea Flower Show, where a new rose was named after her. Anticipating long hours standing on wet grass for interviews and photo calls, the lady had fallen back on her wellies, confident, foolishly, that she'd only be photoed from the waist up.
Fashion is ridiculous.
I still wear anything.
Underneath it all, we all have a beautiful suit, our birthday suit.
Exactly.
And it's a beautiful suit.
Well, hold on.
Semi-drape, one-button fastening.
Yeah. I'll tell you what.
What's wrong with the suit you were born? I'm going to get turned and switch it to my...
Well, there was the...
There
was the old man that decided to streak through the middle of Munsborough.
Oh, boy.
He was about 95, and the two old ladies, short-sighted old ladies, saw him go past. And he said, who was that? He said, I don't know, but I think he should get a new tailor.
Yeah, I don't know who he was, but his suit needed ironing.
That was the best of it.
There was a fellow once, and he went to visited a golf club, like you do now again, Frank.
Now and again,
you know, visited a golf club, and he decided, different golf club of his own, and he decided to have a shower, and he went in. Unfortunately, it was ladies' day, you see, and there he is, stuck in the shower, and all the ladies in the next room, and his clothes, of course, are in the... So
I told you not to tell this.
I'm sorry about that. And he had to get through all this crowd of ladies to get to his trousers before he could make himself to go and... So he... he thought... And Christian Flash, he thought of night, he saw the bucket and he put the bucket over his head and ran pell-mell through this group of ladies. And as he ran through, one lady said, well, it's not my husband. And another lady said, well, it certainly isn't my husband. And the red-headed gay lady said, well, she said, it isn't a member of this golf club, I'll tell you that.
Well, that's, alas, all we've got time for. We've run out of time. If you're wondering why your neighbor's wearing a pith helmet or why there's gas coming out of the water tap, let us know and we'll try and work it out. For now, this is David Frost thanking you for joining us. On behalf of Ken Dodd, Bernie Clifton and Frank Carson, Andrew Palmer and Nell Brennan, who devised and researched, and, of course, our producer, the beloved Edward Taylor. And we hope you'll join us again next time. It's time to pull the other one.
Minutes of non-stop jokes on Thursday evenings at 10 here on Radio 2. Well, if you're free this Saturday evening to be able to get to London and need cheering up, then how about coming along to a recording of Mackay the New, our comedy series? It's on at our Paris studio, Lower Regent Street. The doors open at 7:15, the recording starts at 7:30, and tickets, which are free, are available at the door. That's this Saturday at 7:15. But now back to this evening, and just after the news at 11, Brian Matthew will be here again with Round Midnight. And among his guests tonight, well, there's Griff Wrist Rhys Jones and Dinsdale Landon, who are both now starring in a revival of Ben Travers' Fast Thark. That's now on in London. And another guest is Nick Wallace, the Deputy Director of the Glasgow 90 Festival. And John Thompson will be here with his personal review of the paper's Press Watch. That's Round Midnight between 11 and 1 here on Radio 2.
The home of entertainment, your 24-hour friend. Radio 2 brand new. That's the perfect blend.
And now it's time to meet Fletcher's friends. Yes, we're about to recall some of the great personalities of a few years ago in the company of the man who knew them all, ladies and gentlemen, Cyril Fletcher.
Thank you, and welcome back to Fletcher's Friends. Now, most of my chums in this series have been comedy performers, Today, I'm starting with a man who wasn't, strictly speaking, a performer at all. A communicator, perhaps. Certainly a great personality. Above all, one of the best-known voices in Britain in the 1950s. He was very erudite, great company, and a marvellous raconteur. And he didn't suffer fools gladly. In case you haven't already guessed, I'm referring to Gilbert Harding. In those days, Gilbert never seemed to be off radio and TV, but I suppose the show in which he's best remembered is this one.
Am I right in thinking that the public authority with which you work is not necessarily local and municipal?
Yes.
It is a wider authority.
Yes.
You work, in fact, for the government?
Yes, sir.
You do. Now then, what government is ever to go around with these here twitches? I know exactly what you are. I know exactly what you are. You go round working instruments to find out who have not taken out television licenses.
Anyone recall what the show was? What's My Line? Yes, indeed. One of the BBC's top TV shows on those Sunday nights of long ago. And Gilbert was a more or less permanent fixture on the programme, and I had the pleasure of being his fellow panellist for 3 years. Do you remember all those wonderful occupations that they used to find for us to guess? Chicken sexer, confetti cutter, maggot breeder, tennis ball inflator, pepper pot perforator, jelly baby varnisher, hog slapper,